Good morning. I want to call your attention to what might have been a bulletin insert that will be helpful in today's sermon. Does everyone have that? Great, okay. On one side it has the Bible passages that will be used along the way in the sermon, so you can follow along when we read those. On the other is a summary of the main things we'll talk about today. In my last sermon about a month ago, I introduced a series called The Other Half of the Great Commission. It's not always noticed that the Great Commission has two halves. We're all familiar with the beginning of it. Go ye into all the world and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them into the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We hear sermons on that pretty often, most recently last week, when Kit Dotson was with us. But there is a second commandment in the Great Commission too. It adds, number two, teaching them, these new disciples, teaching them to obey all the things that I have commanded, said Jesus. The first part of the Great Commission is about making new Christians. The second part of the Great Commission is about growing them up. We grow up to become mature Christians by learning about and putting into practice the words of our Lord Jesus. In my series, I'm going to look one at a time at a fair number of Jesus' most important teachings, probably 8 or 10 of them, so I might be 2 years before I'm done the way we do sermons around here. Okay. And in each case, we're going to do two things. We'll start with a little bit about trying to understand the teaching, and then we're going to spend a fair amount of time on that obeying part of it. Notice Jesus didn't say, teach them to memorize, get a gold star for doing that, teach them to know about. He said, teach them to obey. Okay. And so that means that our emphasis ought to be on obeying the commandment. And so there'll be a lot of examples, a lot of things like that, try to help us to that end. I'm beginning today with possibly the best known of all Jesus' teachings. It's one we're all aware of, so we won't talk too long about the understanding part of it, though there are things to say, but we'll spend quite a bit of time on the obeying part of it, the golden rule. I begin with the King Jamesy language that most of us know by heart, if you read along with me. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. And a more modern language, which doesn't have ye's and thou's and things, from the NIV, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. Well, let's start then with a little bit about understanding the rule. And the first thing about understanding it is to understand that everyone understood it. It was not new in Jesus' teachings. It is not unique to Christianity. There are versions of the golden rule in absolutely every major religion, also in non-religious moral systems. You find it in Buddhism, Confucianism, Taoism, Islam, Native American religion, Native African religions. Usually those are in the negative form. It will normally say something like, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you, but not always. 400 years before Jesus said this, the Greek philosopher Plato had it word for word, the same as we have it in our New Testaments. And 300 and 400 years before Jesus said this, we find it roughly in the same language in Jewish writings that were produced between the close of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New, writings that we have to this day. And in fact, in Jesus' day, the rabbis who were in charge of the synagogues customarily taught the golden rule as a way to summarize Moses' law. They said, if you really want to sum up Moses' law, the things that he taught, follow this rule. Treat people the way you want them to treat you. So Jesus was not inventing something when he gave the rule. He was reminding his hearers of something they already know, already knew. He was reminding them of things they'd heard from their rabbis. And when he said, this is the law and the prophets, That was just a Jewish phrase for the day, in the day, for meeting what we call the Old Testament writings. If you want to sum up everything from Genesis to Malachi, apply this rule. Treat people the way that you want to be treated. Now, using the rule can be a little trickier than you'd think at first from how it's worded. It says whatsoever, right? Whatsoever you want to do. What you do is you ask yourself, how would you like to be treated? And then you do that to or for someone else. It's been pointed out by many, many people for centuries that if you take that unreservedly, that is without any qualifications, you get some pretty weird results. Okay. For example, think of a sadomasochist. A sadomasochist likes pain. If the sadomasochist likes pain, and he says, well, the way to treat people is to ask what I like and do that to or for them, we get a pretty bad result, right? Another kind of case is pointed out is that none of us really want to be imprisoned, even if we were guilty of a crime, right? We wouldn't want to go. Does that mean we have to scrap the whole penal system, the whole judiciary? We'd be making people do something we wouldn't have liked to have them do to us. Let's suppose, and this actually isn't true, that I like charades a lot. Okay. Does that mean that every time people get near me, I force them to play charades because that's what I like to do? Okay. You can see that if you take this rule, this whatsoever, to be unbounded, you get some pretty strange results from it. Well, you know, here, as so often, the solution is found by looking at the context. In 12 years of preaching sermons for us, one thing Kevin said more often than anything else, you all know it by heart, context is king, right? And how right he was, okay? When you want to understand anything in the scriptures, don't just look at an isolated verse, look at the setting and see what it's talking about. So we need to do that with the golden rule. Very often when people say whatsoever or all, what they really mean is all the kind of things I've been talking about, not all kinds of things in general. Let me give an example or two. When I was teaching, I taught a lot of classes. I probably taught about 50 different classes, content classes in my career, but there were three of them I had on my menu every semester, whatever else I had. Logic, biblical studies, and ethics. Okay. And I had a policy when I taught ethics and biblical studies, okay, that whenever a student until the last week had a score below 70, which was average, okay, I would give them a chance to make up any score lower than that. Okay. They would come and see me, we'd have an alternative assignment, an alternative quiz, we would have a way to make sure they'd learn the material. And I would change it to a 70. Couldn't do that after the last week because there wasn't time left to do it. But I did that, and it was a good policy, and it took a lot of pressure off people, because what I cared about is people learning things. Okay. Now, in my logic class, I didn't have that policy, because every semester our department had several sections of logic, and we had agreed policies, and that was not one of them. Well, let's suppose that one of my logic students came up to me and said, I hear you said that whoever has a score below 70 can make up that score, and here I just have a 42 on this last assignment. Well, I said whoever, didn't I? Okay. But what I meant was whoever of you in my biblical studies or ethics class. Very often we say whoever, we say all, we say every, and we mean people in a certain group. The Hayes Post will tell you that anyone who is doing outdoor watering between noon and 7 any day of the week can be fined. Does that apply in Johnson County? You see the point? It may say anyone, but it's not really anyone. When Jesus says whatsoever, he's using whatsoever in a context. And the context is one in which he wants us to think about the kind of things he's talking about, all of those, and that's where we apply the rule. Let's think of what he's been talking about. Just before he gives the rule in Matthew's account, he's been talking about asking for things and receiving them, and about giving gifts to people, and the kind of gifts you would want to give, and the kind of gifts you'd want to receive. Just before that, a little bit, he's been talking about not judging people, and warning that the kind of judging you do of other people will come back on us on Judgment Day itself. The point is made most clear, though, by looking at Luke's version. This in your insert, let's read along. I have quite a bit of it, so we'll get the feel for the context. Luke wrote, "But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies. Do good to them. Lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." In looking at what Luke said, as well as what our reminders from what Matthew said, we see what the context is all about. Jesus isn't talking about desires in general. Obviously, he's not talking about perverted or weird desires, right? He's talking instead about our desire to be treated graciously and with mercy. This is the context. How do we behave when there are people who are needy around us and ask for things? How do we behave when somebody has been mean to us, when somebody's injured us or stolen from us? Do we treat them badly, or do we treat them the way we should want to be treated? That is his subject here. So what the golden rule is doing is it's saying, remember how you'd like to be treated in a case like that? In all of these kind of cases, how would you like to be treated? Wouldn't you want one more chance? Wouldn't you want to be forgiven? Don't you want mercy? And in fact, think how God works. God pours out bounty on the people who are unkind, the people who are evil. He causes, as Matthew has it, the rain to fall for people who are just and unjust alike. God's gracious to people whether they deserve it or not. That's what the rule's about. It's about how we treat people in those kind of cases. People in cases where they're needy and we wonder what to give them or help them with. Cases where they've hurt us, injured us, maybe said bad things about us. What do we do in a case like that? Another element to the golden rule that comes through, and it's not often talked about, but is very clear in Luke's version, it's about the last third or fourth of it, is that the way we use the golden rule will have a lot to do with our own final judgment. This is not a real comfortable teaching, but it's everywhere in Jesus' teachings. Jesus tells us, not only here, but in more detail back in Matthew 6, that if we forgive other people, God will forgive us. But if we don't, he won't. I'm quoting him. Jesus said that. Jesus said in the Beatitudes that it's the merciful who are going to receive mercy. Jesus said that when we judge other people, that we better watch out, because God's going to look up the rules we use judging others, and he's going to use them on us. The way we did the judging is how we are going to be judged. And he concluded what I just read in Luke with you. The measure we use in helping others is the measure we'll get. Suppose you contributed to help the needy around the world by dropping a quarter in the offering plate. That's your measure, right? Well, you should expect that kind of help from God later. Okay. But let's suppose that you were very generous. You gave all that you possibly could to help people. That's the kind of measure that God is going to use. That's what he means by measure. Well, that's the rule. And that's what the rule means and what it applies to. Let's ask now why we often do such a bad job obeying it, whether we understood it perfectly or not. It's often said of the golden rule that it's the best known and the least obeyed rule in the New Testament. Best known and least obeyed. If we ask ourselves, why do we do such a crummy job of obeying the rule? I thought about that hard, and I could find at least three reasons. Maybe more thought would identify more. But these three, I think, are important. The first one didn't take a lot of our time. A lot of cases are due to simple, brutal, self-aware selfishness. Somebody knows that they're doing something they couldn't possibly want somebody else to do, but they think, I'm an exception to the rules, and they just do it anyhow. I think of cases like that. Suppose somebody who throws trash in other people's yards. Okay, that ever happen? You bet. Think of cases where, say, somebody at a church dinner who wants to get first in line, elbows their way up there first, then goes along and takes most of the pie and the best pieces of cake before anyone else can go through. Okay, we don't really have people like that, but you could picture it. Okay. What about somebody who's doing wildly wasteful water use in a time of severe drought? They don't care about anybody else. This is me. This is my yard. I'm going to use it this way. I'm afraid cases like this are not rare, not rare at all, but they're not complicated. It doesn't take somebody speaking like I am in a sermon to show what's wrong with it. We all know what's wrong with it. I think instead of analyzing, we just say, quit it. We say, grow up. You're not the only person on this planet. And that's what I'm going to do and move to the second. The second's a little more complicated. Thoughtlessness. I'm not thinking now of vicious people who are just completely aware that they're really not caring about other people. These are people who may be not thinking they're doing that at all. But there is a kind of an unconscious autopilot in which we think of ourselves differently than we think of other people. In my own case, I very much know that I want things like mercy and grace and forgiveness. I sure don't want to be judged on my merits by God or anyone else. And if you're honest with yourself, you don't either. We've all had thoughts we're deeply ashamed of and would hope that nobody ever knew or heard, right? We all have failed people at different times in our lives. But what do we want? We want people to forgive us. We want them to say, okay, you messed up, but let's start again. Let's do better next time. We want to be forgiven. And we might have injured somebody, and we want them not to retaliate, but to forgive us, to patch it up, and let us get back together again in a spirit of peace and love. That's what we all want in our own case, isn't it? We all want to be treated that way. But what do we instinctively do with other people? They've got to stand on their merits. Let's see some bootstrap pulling, right? They're going to have to earn this. It's a matter of justice and rights and deserving. Other people have to prove themselves to gain our favor. We don't want freeloaders. We don't want people who are expecting to be helped without having shown that they're among the deserving poor. You ever hear that kind of talk? Okay. Is that how you want to be treated? Is it? If you don't want to be treated that way, should you be treating other people that way? That's what Jesus is talking about here. It's instinctive. We all do this, but we shouldn't. We need to work on it. Okay? And that's why obeying the golden rule is sometimes kind of hard. It's good to remember, as Jesus put there, both in Matthew and in Luke, reminders of how God treats us. Did God wait until Steve Trammell had gone all the way back from bad things to a good Reformation record for a while? Did he say, I wanted to see five straight years without any such and such going on? Okay. God didn't do that. How did God treat me and how did he treat you? While we were sinners, while we were at the end of our rope, at the lowest we could go, some cases pretty ugly, he sent his son to die for us, didn't he? And how does he treat us all the time? He pours out lavish bounty and grace on us day by day, whether we deserve it or not. Be like God. That's what the golden rule said. Treat other people, not just the way you want to be treated, but the way you want God to treat you. Jesus tells a parable in Matthew 18 about a servant who had gotten into some financial trouble and had really done some bad stuff with his master's money. And he was scared to death, but he went to his master and the master forgave him. Then he went out and was unwilling to forgive anyone else. He was about as mean as he could be. Well, that wasn't the end of the story. Things did not go well for that servant at the end of the parable. The message is pretty clear. If we want to be forgiven, we had better be forgiving. If we want to be given a break, we had better be giving people breaks. It's about that obvious. I think of lots of examples of this kind of double standard that we instinctively have of self versus others. I won't give too many, but just a couple. When we have somebody we like a lot, a really close friend, and sometimes evidence starts to mount that they've been guilty of some pretty bad stuff, and we probably all live long enough to have that happen, what do? We instinctively start making excuses and justifying, and it's not really as bad as it looks. Why? That person is dear to us, right? But take somebody you don't like so well. And the merest casual rumor from some person, not even founded necessarily. But it's an ugly rumor. And what do? Listen, that's one of their problems, right? In other words, we're willing to believe anything bad about the people who aren't necessarily in our particular group. Well, you know, if we're only nice to people who are nice to us, that's not a big deal. What credit is that, asked Jesus? It's how we treat people who aren't nice to us that really matters. And let me add that time matters too. We can apply the golden rule across generations. Suppose one generation decided that it wouldn't worry a thing, not a bit, about how it's using the earth's resources. Okay. That we're going to have a big party. We're just going to glut ourselves with consumer goods till we can't have any more. And we'll just keep making them. And at the same time, two generations from now, what kind of world are we leaving to people? What kind of climate damage is being done? What kind of a waste of resources? This is serious. This is happening right now. Okay. We need to apply the golden rule so that we treat other generations the way we wanted earlier generations to treat us. If we wanted to be left a world we could live in sustainably, what should we do? Leave a world that people can live in sustainably after us. A third reason we don't obey the rule as well as we might is lack of imagination. I think sometimes we mean well. We really try to obey the rule, but we're kind of clumsy at doing it because we don't picture things very well. I think, for example, of the fact that we don't experience other people's lives the way we experience our own. Think about your own fears. When you feel fear, right? It's real. There it is. You feel the nerves, the blood pressure rise, you know, all of that. Somebody else tells me they're scared. Do I feel it? Or do I just sort of note it as an abstract fact? I don't feel other people's fears like I feel my own. Other people's hopes? Well, that's a fact, I note. My own, I feel them, okay? My hopes and fears, everything about me is something I experience and live, and it's vivid. Yours is not as vivid. Yours is something I'm told about, and I take it seriously and say, yeah, it's true, but I don't experience it the same way. It is so, so hard to picture what it's like to be someone else. I think the conditions of ordinary life also make us have kind of an innocent selfishness sometimes. Sometimes I think the fact that, well, we got to take care of ourselves, don't we? We clothe ourselves, we feed ourselves, we cut our own grass if we're able, you know, all this kind of stuff. Nature makes it where we have to spend a lot of time thinking about self, right? And that's innocent enough, but it's a habit we have to break in a lot of cases. Cases where we're dealing with needy other people, with other people who may have maybe have harmed us. When I do try to put myself in another person's place, it's hard. I bet you've had the same experience. I'll tell you what we tend to do. We tend to take ourselves with all our own beliefs and prejudices. We all have them. You do too. I do. Our beliefs, our prejudices, our perspectives, our point of view. And when I try to picture it for another person, the tendency is all I do is take me and put you in your GPS location. I don't really see it the way you see it. I see it the way I would see it if I were there. And that's a different thing, isn't it? To really understand what it's like to be somebody else is really hard. To try to see the world their way is really hard. The great American psychologist William James wrote an essay called A Certain Blindness in Human Beings, and it was all about this problem of trying to picture other people's lives. And in it, he talks about an example where he had an old friend, a dear friend from college. He hadn't seen him for years, but they were getting together again after all these years. And his friend had become a mining engineer in West Virginia. And when they finally saw each other, his friend was just busting with pride. He was so happy and aglow. They had finished a huge project. He wanted to show James. So he took him out in the country and showed him. There were mountains that were leveled. There was rubble. Forests had been felled. And he couldn't be more proud because of all the coal they'd gotten out of the land. What success he saw. James was just stricken. Beautiful mountains were ruined. Forests were gone. Creeks were running with black sludge. You know what strip mining looks like? You ought to go look, okay? Strip mining does that. James saw something horrible. His friend saw something worth being proud of. It is so hard to picture the world the way other people see it. To apply the rule, we have to do that sometimes. We have to be sensitive enough to try to enter another person's point of view and say, I'm trying to be empathetic. I'm trying to see the world your way. Not my way if I'm sitting where you're sitting, but your way. How you feel and how you think. All the time it happens with tastes in, say, music and recreation. Somebody who loves classical music may not be able to think that people who like country, western, and rock are being sincere. They're faking it for some reason. People who like country, western, and rock think that classical music people can't really like it. They're putting on airs in some way. Isn't that right? We take things like rodeo and demolition derby versus art galleries and theater productions. The ones we like are great, and the ones we don't, well, that's got to be fake. It can't be real. On political things, people on the other side, how do you think about them? I'm afraid if you read the press, people think that they're kind of demons from another planet if they disagree, don't they? Well, you better not think that way. That's not how God thinks. These are precious people. These are people made in his image. You are, and I am, and so are all of them. Let me part today, end today, with just three quick words of advice of how I hope we can do better in obeying the golden rule. One, think of obeying the golden rule as imitating how God treats us. That's what Jesus is doing here. How has God treated us? Did he wait on us to be perfect to help us? He did not, okay? Then what, should we wait on others to be perfect to help? No. We should help them wherever they are, whatever situation they are in, even our enemies. Christian ethics is basically imitation, grateful imitation of God. Second, try hard to be sensitive to individual differences. Try hard to be empathetic, to enter into other people's points of view. We need to be more objective about our own case. We cut ourselves a lot of slack. We need to be a lot more subjective to try to see the things that other people see their way, not our way. And until we do that, we can't apply the rule very well. Each person on this planet, now, in the past, or forever, is made in the image of God. We're told that in the Bible. We all believe that. There is no human being anywhere, even your political opponents, okay? Even people in other lands, there's no human being anywhere that's ever lived or ever will live who does not have a spark of the divine image in them, something godlike. When we fail to see that, when we treat these people badly, how horrible this must be in the eyes of our Lord and our Savior. When we treat people this way, we are basically demeaning God. What we have to do is to be cautious, careful, loving, tender, respectful. You've never met a person that isn't possibly somebody godlike in the next life, that if you saw them the way they are, you'd want to bow to them in respect. Treat people that way, everyone, even our enemies. My third word of advice, I'm afraid, is one that's a little bit harder to think about because it's really not very welcome, but it's true. It's something our Lord taught. Even though we're Christians, we're going to be in the final judgment. The Bible teaches that, even Christians. Okay. And Jesus tells us there's nothing hidden that's not going to be made known. Our most careless words are going to be made known. I don't like that, but it's true. He said it. Picture yourself. I've done this with me in the final judgment. We stand before God's judgment throne. Let's think about how it might go. Let's think of maybe something like a video showing an indictment of our failings, the bad things we've done, evil words, careless words, hurtful things. It might be a pretty long video. It's played. And then a second video is going to be played. How did Steve Trammell behave when he was around needy people? Did he help them or not? Did Steve help people even when they were enemies? Did he forgive people? You know what? If that second video shows me obeying the golden rule, I think the first one just disappears. It's just gone. But if it doesn't, the second's going to be added as another bad chapter to the first. This is not a theory. This is what Jesus said is going to happen. I'm basically just spinning out his own words here. So let me conclude with what I think is a fitting quotation today from Edward Markham. We have committed the golden rule to memory. Let us now commit it to life. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Steve Trammell at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.